This is a reading from a collection of lectures by Rudolf Steiner entitled Education as a Force for Social Change. This is Lecture 5, given in Dornach, August 16, 1919. In our discussions, we need to include an ever-widening consideration of history, of how cosmic forces are embedded in the stream of modern development, and how they form the basis of human life. From our discussions yesterday, you will have seen that if humanity is to progress, we increasingly need to transform our customary fixed and abstract modern concepts into fluid, mobile, living concepts. A consideration of the facts concerning those human soul forces we call intelligence can shed particular light upon that. As you know, modern people are particularly proud of their intelligence. They deem intelligence to be, in a sense, something that in the course of time has made significant progress. When we look back upon earlier times and see that people then often imagined things pictorially, that they attempted to comprehend through myths, legends, and so forth, things that we now believe we understand through intellect, we might think that those earlier people had childish spirits or souls. Today we look back upon the childlike stages of human development and remark about how much we have achieved, particularly in the development of intelligence. In a way, today's discussion is devoted to the peculiarities of human intelligence and concentrates on those soul forces of which modern people are particularly proud. When people now speak of intelligence, they hold a specific picture of a force within the soul. They think intelligence can and should be only the way they habitually think of it. In earlier stages of development, people had intelligence, though of a different sort. To understand the meaning of what modern people call intelligence, we must ask how people in earlier developmental stages viewed intelligence, and how that intelligence slowly changed into the form we find in our times. Today we do not want to go back any further than the time we normally call the third post-Atlantean period, the Egypto-Chaldean period, which was followed by the Greco-Roman period and then by our age. In particular, we want to consider the characteristics of intelligence in the ancient Egyptians, the Chaldeans, Greeks, and Romans, and then go on to consider the particular kind of intelligence that exists among us in the fifth post-Atlantean period. As you can see, I am assuming that it is incorrect, and it is incorrect, when people think intelligence is simply intelligence and is only possible in one form, that is, that someone who has our form of intelligence is intelligent, and someone who does not is not. That is simply not true. Intelligence goes through metamorphoses and transformation. It was different during the Egypto-Chaldean time from the way it is now. We can best visualize intelligence at that time when we recognize that the ancient Egyptians and Chaldeans instinctively comprehended the relationship of their human essence to the entire cosmos through their form of intelligence. The things that modern people reflect upon through their intelligence were not even thought about by the Egypto-Chaldean people, because they did not have the same kind of intelligence. When they thought, when they brought their intelligence into motion, their connection with the cosmos lived in that intelligence. The ancient Egyptians and Chaldeans knew how they stood in relationship to one or another of the zodiacal signs. They recognized the influence of the moon and the sun and the other planets upon their souls and their bodily constitution. They knew how the rhythms of the seasons affected their nature. They comprehended all that through their intelligence, and they gained a complete inner picture of their relationship to the cosmos through their intelligence. Intelligence changed as the Egypto-Chaldean period of humanity came to a close in the 8th century before Christ. Slowly, intelligence became something quite different from that of Egypto-Chaldean times. intelligence began to lose the complete comprehension of its connection with the cosmos. That understanding ceased to exist as completely as it had before the 8th century BC. People were still aware of a connection to the cosmos, but they knew it more as a kind of echo, or a kind of memory of what earlier people knew. In its place, a thinking arose in Greek intelligence that was more about human beings themselves, so that people had less relationship to the cosmos and were more inhabitants of the earth. The Greeks had a clear feeling and a clear perception of that through their intelligence. Through that intelligence, they comprehended all that occurred in mortal, earthly life. That feeling was then lost through the development of intelligence that began in the middle of the 15th century, that is, with the beginning of the 5th post-Atlantean period. If the Greeks wanted to understand something supersensible, they knew they had to turn to looking, to a kind of looking that existed more or less atavistically in the pre-Christian era and still existed in the Greeks. They knew that through reflection and through intelligence, they could only learn about the principles and laws that form the foundation of everything that exists and dies in mortal life. Quote, "If I am to understand the living, I must look," unquote, so said Plato's students. That is, quote, "If I only think, I can only comprehend what is dead," unquote. The Greek occult schools examined a particular subject in this regard. They examined approximately the following situation. Quote, "Everything is spiritual. Even those things that appear material have spiritual processes and spiritual principles at their foundation. Those things that appear to be of an earthly material character are also fundamentally ruled by spiritual law. There are spiritual laws to which you are subject because you are physical. To the extent that you live in physical existence and then pass through the gates of death, your body will give itself over to material forces and to the material of the earth. However, these material forces and earthly matter only seem material. They are also spiritual, but permeated by those spirits that appear to you as death. If through your intelligence you comprehend any laws, those are the laws of death. They are the laws of those forces that are contained within graves and that receive corpses." Unquote. Many Greek occult students became convinced that human intelligence can comprehend only those things that are received by graves and that hold corpses. The occult teachers told their students that if they wanted to know about the spiritual realm they live in while on earth, or about the realm they live in with a disembodied soul between death and rebirth, then they must receive what they see with conviction. If they were not convinced of what they saw, but instead developed concepts and ideas through their intelligence, they would comprehend only the material spirit that receives their physical bodies. In his or her intelligence, the Egypto-Chaldean human being perceived and felt a relationship with the entire cosmos, but the Greek intelligence perceived what ruled the grave. Our intelligence also perceives only what rules the grave, but we do not know that. Those of us who study such things go into dissection rooms and probe corpses, thus learning the principles of corpses that our intelligence can comprehend. Then we make them into the principles of human beings. Those are, however, only principles of the grave. Our intelligence comprehends only principles of the grave. About the time of the transition, during the middle of the 15th century, intelligence changed again. We are now only at the beginning of this stage and transformation of intelligence. Our intelligence goes along a particular path. Today the development of intelligence that began with the Greeks still strongly envelops us. Through our intelligence, we comprehend only the underlying death. However, that kind of death-comprehending intelligence is changing. In the next centuries and millennia, intelligence will become something different, something vastly different. our modern intelligence already has a certain tendency. As human beings, our intelligence will further develop, so that it will tend to comprehend only what is false, to comprehend only errors and illusions, and to think only about evil things. Occult students, and in particular initiates, have known for some time that human intelligence is developing toward evil, and that it will become more and more difficult to recognize good simply through intelligence. Humanity is now undergoing that change. It is now barely possible for people, when they exert their intelligence, and are not carried away by especially wild instincts, to still look toward the light of what is good. However, human intelligence will more and more tend to conceive evil and to integrate that evil into human morality and knowledge, creating error. That is one of the reasons why the initiates call themselves people of anxiety. Because, in fact, if you consider the one-sidedness of human development that I just mentioned, you will become anxious. You will become anxious because of the development of intelligence. It is certainly not for no reason at all that so much pride and aloofness has entered into the intelligence of modern people. That is a kind of prelude to the way intelligence is becoming evil in our fifth post-Atlantean period, which is now only beginning. If people develop nothing more than their intelligence, they will become evil beings upon the earth. When we look to the future of humanity and want to think of that future as healthy, we may not rely upon that one-sided development of intelligence. During the Egypto-Chaldean period, intelligence was something good, but then it became connected with the forces of death. In the future, intelligence will enter a relationship with the forces of error, illusion, and evil. This is something about which humanity should have no illusions. Humanity needs to recognize objectively that we must protect ourselves against a one-sided development of intelligence. There is, of course, a reason why something else has arisen through anthroposophically oriented spiritual science, namely an acceptance of what we can achieve through a renewal in looking at the spiritual world, something we cannot comprehend through intelligence. We can comprehend it only when people embrace what the science of initiation can bring from the spiritual world through seeing. However, we also need objectivity for that, and here we confront a deep mystery, particularly in Christian esoteric development. Had the mystery of Golgotha not occurred in earthly development, it would be unavoidable that people would fall to become evil beings living in error due to their intelligence. The mystery of Golgotha is not simply a teaching or a theory or a view of the world or a religion that arose during the development of humanity. Something did, in fact, occur through the mystery of Golgotha. That super-earthly being, Christ, lived in the human being, Jesus of Nazareth. Since Christ lived in Jesus of Nazareth and Jesus died, the Christ being then entered earthly development. The earth now contains the Christ being. We need only be conscious of that as an objective fact, a fact that has nothing to do with what we subjectively understand or feel. We must know it for the sake of our knowledge. We must accept it into our ethical culture for the sake of our morality. Christ has entered into human development, and since the resurrection lives there, primarily in our soul forces, grasp the full depth of this fact. Look at the difference between people who lived before and those who lived after the mystery of Golgotha. Certainly they are the same people, because souls go through repeated earthly lives. However, when we look at human beings as earthly beings, we have to differentiate between those humans who lived before and those who lived after the mystery of Golgotha. You see, if you look for a general understanding of God, that understanding is not the same as a comprehension of Christ. You can achieve a general understanding of God by going out and looking at things in nature. If you look at the physical human being, to the extent you can observe it externally, you can achieve it. However, you can only approach the Christ being if you discover something within yourself during earthly life. You can find a general understanding of God by simply saying to yourself that you have come into earthly existence from cosmic forces. However, you can find an understanding of Christ only if you go further than nature allows. If during your existence in the world you do not find an understanding of God, this lack of understanding is a kind of illness. A healthy person is never really an atheist. An atheist would, in one way or another, be ill, either in body or soul. That illness often reveals itself only through the fact that a person is an atheist. However, not knowing Christ is not an illness. It is a misfortune, a missed opportunity. If you reflect upon the fact that you were born out of nature and out of nature's forces, then with a healthy soul, you can then achieve an understanding of God. If you experience something like a rebirth during your life, then you can achieve an understanding of Christ. Birth leads us to God, rebirth to Christ. Before the mystery of Golgotha, human beings could not find within themselves that rebirth through which people can find Christ. That is the difference toward which I ask you to direct your attention, namely that human beings before the mystery of Golgotha could not find that rebirth and could not understand that Christ lived within them, because Christ had not yet entered humanity. Since the mystery of Golgotha, that is now possible. Human beings can find the spark of Christ within themselves if they exert themselves during life. In that rebirth, in finding the spark of Christ in ourselves, in an upright and honest ability to say, quote, "not I, but Christ in me," unquote, lies the possibility of not allowing the intellect to fall into deception and evil. That is the higher meaning of salvation in an esoteric Christian sense. We need to develop our intelligence, since we cannot become less intelligent. However, we stand before the temptation to fall into error and evil when we attempt to develop our intelligence. We can escape that temptation only by gaining a feeling for what the mystery of Golgotha brought into human development. It is absolutely true that people have a possibility of escaping evil and error only in Christ consciousness and in being united with Christ. Egypto-Chaldean people did not need a rebirth in Christ, because they still felt a relationship to the cosmos through their natural intelligence. The Greeks had the seriousness of death before them when they used their intelligence. Now, however, people live at the beginning of an age when intelligence will become evil if they do not permeate their souls with Christ as strength. When you think about that, you will see that it is a very serious matter. It shows us how we should understand certain things that begin to appear in our time, how we should think about the fact that people in our time will develop a tendency toward evil because they are moving toward a further development of their intelligence. It would, of course, be completely false to believe we should suppress our intelligence. We should not suppress intelligence, but in the future, those with insight will need a certain kind of courage to use it, because that intelligence brings with it the temptation toward evil and error. We will need to find a way to transform intelligence by permeating it with Christ as principle. Human intelligence will become entirely Ahrimanic if Christ does not permeate human souls as principle. You can see how much of what I have just described is now beginning to be visible in modern human development and is visible to people with insight. Recall what the third aspect of human development, threatening humanity through materialism, brings to people today. If you remember how much cruelty exists within modern cultural development, a cruelty barely comparable to that of barbarian times, you will hardly doubt that the demise of intelligence has clearly begun. We should not look at modern cultural developments superficially. Nor should we doubt that modern people who want to work toward healthier development should attempt to achieve a true comprehension of the Christ impulse. Today there are two things we can clearly see. One is that very intelligent people tend toward evil, and the other is that many people unconsciously suppress that tendency by allowing their intelligence to sleep, thereby not fighting against it. At the present there is clearly a sleepiness in human souls, or in those souls that are awake, a strong tendency toward evil and error. You may recall that I mentioned in a previous lecture that children born in the last 5, 6, 7 years are different from children born earlier. Those who look closely can see a clearly melancholic shadow in their faces. I said that arises because modern souls do not want to come into an earthly existence so filled with materialism. You could even say that before birth souls have a kind of anxiousness about entering the world, a world where intelligence so tends toward evil, and where people are so caught up in a downward developmental spiral. Teachers need to develop a consciousness of that. Children are different today than they were some decades ago. This is clear, even from superficial observation. Children need us to teach them differently than they were taught some decades ago. Teachers need to educate children with an awareness that what they are really doing is saving the children, and that they need to bring the children a way of finding Christ as an impulse in the course of their lives, that is, of finding their own rebirth. Such things cannot develop in teaching when, for example, you have only a simple theoretical comprehension of them. They develop in teaching only when your soul is strongly affected by them. We must particularly expect teachers' souls to be strongly affected by an awareness of the temptation that intellect brings to humanity. The pride modern people have developed for their intellect could take a grave toll upon humanity were it not held in check through what I have just discussed. That is, if we do not balance our pride in the intellect with a strong and energetic awareness that the best thing for us as human beings in this and following incarnations is that we find what of Christ exists in us as impulse. Now, you must, of course, be aware that you will not find Christ as impulse in the dogmatism of some religious group. Since the middle of the 15th century, the churches have done more to distance humanity from the Christ impulse than to bring humanity to it. Religions make all kinds of promises, but in doing that they do not bring Christ to people as impulse. Since the mystery of Golgotha, people need to feel that everything their inner selves can reveal to them is connected with the meaning of the mystery of Golgotha for the earth. If you perceive the meaning for the earth of the mystery of Golgotha, you can recognize that the development of the earth would be senseless if human beings now fall into evil and error through their intelligence. If you perceive the meaning of the mystery of Golgotha in that way, you will also see how senseless earthly development would be without the mystery of Golgotha. If you decide to do something today or in the future to teach and educate human beings, you need to be very strongly permeated with that thought. People need to accept this general perspective, but you certainly know how far modern people are from accepting it. Thus nothing is more necessary than to point out again and again not only the importance of spiritual scientific principles, but also the seriousness that must fill our souls so that we may learn the corresponding facts in human development through spiritual science. Not only our knowledge, but our entire life should receive the impulse of spiritual science. If you do not feel that seriousness, you will not be a spiritual scientist. I would ask that you give particular attention to what a spiritual scientific foundation reveals, namely that human intelligence, left to itself, will drift toward the Ahrimanic path, and that we can direct it toward the good only by accepting Christ as the true impulse. I believe that those who accept the full seriousness of this truth will also bring that seriousness into the relationships they develop to the various modern points of view and philosophical streams. Here there is very much to do. People who come from various areas of Eastern Europe often relate with particular disgust a fact that certainly does not point to positive developments along the path of civilization. what I refer to is the presence of the so-called, quote, gun-toting women, unquote. This is a specific group of women now emerging in Eastern Europe. Eastern European women used in the revolutionary movements there. People who do not belong to the ruling party there are often imprisoned or killed, and thus always fear for their lives. In some parts of the East, young women armed with old guns left over from the war are responsible for shooting those people opposed to the government now in control. These gun-toting women dress up in stolen clothing. They dress to kill and enjoy carrying their rifles and shooting people. They like to brag about it, about how it feels to see blood spurting from young people and how older people's blood looks. These are the kinds of ghastly situations we find in modern civilization. The existence of gun women is one of the proud achievements of the present. We need to point out such things. They are there to cause us to look at the underside of the seriousness of our times. Certainly we do not need to know about every aberration of our so-called progressive culture to feel the earnestness with which we should apply ourselves to present-day problems. That seriousness should arise in us simply through an understanding of human development itself. We would hope that the sleep in which humanity now finds itself will change into an awakening. That awakening can result only from a comprehension of the seriousness of the task presented to people today. These aberrations indicate the dangers presented by an intellect left to itself and steering toward an Aramonic path. That should be the impulse that arouses a feeling in us for the seriousness of the problem. The end of Lecture 5.